The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
Well, good morning. My name is Andrea, for those of you who have not met before. And a few weeks ago, I was here and I gave a talk on aspiration and motivation and its connection with our intentions. And at the end of that talk, I talked about some of the Buddha's understanding about how we can orient our intentions towards the Dharma, and just briefly touched on three intentions of non-ill will, non-cruelty, and renunciation. And renunciation is a challenging one, and so I thought I'd take some time to explore that topic today. And I'm going to start with some of the things I said the last time. So if you were here last time, you'll hear a couple of things repeated. But this frames the talk pretty well, I think. You know, the word renunciation doesn't have such a good vibe in our culture. We think of it as giving up something we want or we like, giving up something that, you know, almost as if the giving up itself is good, you know, that letting go of something we want, that somehow that's inherently good. And I'll address that actually a little later in the talk. And it's not just our own culture that has that view. I mean, 2,600 years ago, a lay person came to the Buddha and said, "We are householders who indulge in sensuality, delight in sensuality, enjoy sensuality, rejoice in sensuality. For us, indulging in sensuality, delighting in sensuality, rejoicing in sensuality, renunciation seems like a sheer drop-off. Yet I've heard that in this teaching, the hearts of the very young monks leap up at renunciation, grow confident, steadfast, and firm, seeing it as peace. So right here is where this teaching is contrary to the great mass of people, this issue of renunciation." And the image of the sheer drop-off, that renunciation feels like a sheer drop-off, that's pretty evocative to me. It's like, you know, stepping off a cliff. You know, it's the way that we typically think of how happiness is found is through having things that we like, you know, finding things, associating ourselves with things that are pleasant, delighting, wished for, and getting rid of things that we don't want. And that's the whole way that we've learned that happiness comes about. And so to think about renunciation, of letting go of wanting pleasant things in our life, it's like, well, where on earth would happiness come from then? And the Buddha also, he understood this. He said, in response to this, he said, so it is. Even myself, before my awakening, I thought, renunciation is good, seclusion is good. But my heart didn't leap up at renunciation, didn't grow confident, steadfast, or firm, seeing it as peace. And so even the Buddha, you know, it wasn't like his heart was saying, yes, renunciation, I want to do that. Even though some part of his mind understood there might be a benefit to that. And he started questioning and exploring. The thought occurred to me, what is the cause? Why doesn't my heart leap up at renunciation, grow confident, steadfast, or firm, seeing it as peace? The thought occurred to me, I haven't seen the drawback of sense pleasure. I haven't pursued that theme. I haven't understood the reward of renunciation. I haven't familiarized myself with that. That's why my heart doesn't leap up at renunciation. And so, and then this part I really like, actually, because, so it says, if having seen the drawback of sense pleasures, I were to pursue that theme, if I were to pursue the theme about renunciation, what are the benefits of renunciation? What are the drawbacks of sense pleasure? Maybe there would be some understanding there. And this is the whole key to the Buddhist understanding around renunciation. It's not, as I said a few minutes ago, that sometimes the idea of renunciation in our culture is that somehow it's inherently good to let go of something we want. And here the Buddha points to what's useful about letting go of something that we want is that we begin to understand something about sense pleasure, how our happiness is dependent on it. We begin to understand something about how that pleasure actually doesn't last that long, and that we just immediately need to go looking for something else to find. And so the looking at the pleasures in sense pleasure, the Buddha encourages us to understand what is the happiness that's found in sense pleasure, and how good is that anyway? So understanding and curiosity, exploration of, so if you are to explore letting go of some kind of sense pleasure, it's not just to simply say, okay, I'm let go of that, and then, you know, at the end of whatever, like Lent, I'll pick that back up again. His encouragement is to explore, well, what happens when you let go of sense pleasure? What's going on in the mind? What's going on? How does the mind function there? And that's what we'll get into in a little bit to begin to explore that. And so the exploration, the understanding about what happens when we let go of something, that's what he wants us to start looking at. Not just saying that inherently renouncing sense pleasure is good, but that letting go of sense pleasure will help us to understand something about our minds, help us, and sometimes perhaps not letting go of sense pleasure will help us to understand something about what we're sticking to. And then this is the part I really love, is that the Buddha says, so at a later time, having understood the drawback of sense pleasures, having understood the reward of renunciation, my heart did leap up at the thought of renunciation. And the thing I like about that is it says, at a later time. You know, this was not something, having had the thought, oh, maybe I should think about the benefits of renunciation and the drawbacks of sense pleasure, and just like immediate. It was an exploration of his own mind. And this is what I think he wants us to do for ourselves. He always is asking us to explore for ourselves, explore in our own experience. So essentially, I think, you know, sense pleasure itself, sense pleasure has quite a hold on us, because partly because that is, it's not just our culture, it's human nature. It's very deeply embedded in our human conditioning that when we get something pleasant, we like it. It feels good. When we get rid of something unpleasant, it feels good to do that. And so it's a little bit of happiness, a little bit of relief that comes when we get something we want and we get something we don't want. Get rid of something we don't want. So there's that kind of moment of, oh, figured it out, got that thing, feel good about that. And that lasts as long as it lasts. And then when that fades, when that pleasure of that thing fades, because that was the last time we felt pretty good was when we had something, when we got something we wanted or got rid of something we don't want, we figure, well, that's as good as it gets. That's what's going to make me happy. So we're on this cycle, just keeping looking for something that we want, keeping looking for things to get rid of that we don't want, and believing that this sense pleasure is how happiness comes to be. Partly because our culture reinforces that, our cultures reinforce that, and because it's very difficult without somebody pointing out, without somebody coming along and saying, you know, there's a better happiness out there than the happiness of getting what you want. There's more peace, more ease that is possible than being on that cycle of getting what I want, getting what I want, getting rid of what I don't want, getting rid of what I don't want. There's that cycle itself creates a kind of agitation in the heart, and that the kind of the release that can be found in other ways. There's other ways to happiness. But without somebody to point that out to us, and without somebody to say, hey, I mean, it's not just to say, you know, hey, there are other ways to happiness, but to say, this is possible for you to understand in your own experience. You don't have to just believe me. You can look in your own experience and verify this for yourself, and you will find both the kind of unreliable, basically somewhat satisfying, but not terribly satisfying nature of sense pleasure. And there is a more kind of rewarding pleasure around releasing and letting go and aligning ourselves with the nature of the world, the nature of our lives, and not fighting all the time. And yet this not fighting also doesn't mean that we, you know, simply sit back and let things roll over us. And I mean, what seems to happen, at least in my own exploration of this path and in my understanding of what the Buddha taught, that the more we let go of our kind of craving for getting things and getting rid of things, the more our heart is softer and more available to respond to the world, as opposed to feeling it's all about me, I need to get rid of, and that there's more of a sense of empathy and connection and responsiveness in the world that arises very naturally. And in our usual way of going through the world, wanting things and wanting to get rid of things, the wanting and the aversion are some of our key motivators, our key, the key reasons why we think we want to act. And if we see some kind of injustice, we may get angry about that and think that the anger about an injustice would be the motivation for why we would act to do something about that injustice. And the Buddha points to other forms of motivation. That when we see an injustice, another form of motivation arises in the feeling when our heart feels that suffering, is resonating in response to that suffering, the wholesome movement of compassion arises, which wants to act to alleviate suffering, but not out of aversion and hatred, but out of kindness and love and compassion. And so that's a very different motivation for action. And so this is one of those benefits to renunciation, is that our hearts start to not be so quite encrusted with tightness and constriction, and can start to feel more connected ways of responding to the world. So in this exploration, when it says at a later time, at a later time, I understood this. There are other teachings that point to the kind of exploration he made. And there's one three-part exploration around sense pleasure that I think he encourages us to explore. And it's three parts. First, he says that we should understand the gratification with respect to sense pleasure, understand the danger with respect to sense pleasure, and understand the escape with respect to sense pleasure. And so I'll look at each of these and what that means. What do each of these mean? So the gratification with respect to sense pleasure, I particularly appreciate that the Buddha started here. Because this is where we are, most of us, with respect to sense pleasure. We find it gratifying. And the Buddha, actually the Buddha said, let's see if I can find this quote. I set out seeking the gratification in the world. By the world here, what the Buddha means when he uses this term world, it's the world of our sense experience. He described the world as being the world of seeing, smelling, hearing, tasting, touching, and things arising in the mind. So I set out seeking the gratification in experience, basically. Whatever gratification there is in the world, that I have found. I have clearly seen with wisdom just how far the gratification in the world extends. So that's really the exploration, is to look at, to not simply look at gratification as being, oh, that feels good, but to explore, his exploration was, how far does this gratification extend? That is, essentially, how gratifying is it really? And so this is what we can do with sense pleasure. He says, yes, sense pleasure creates a kind of happiness. And it's useful to look at, so the gratification of sense pleasure, he says, is the joy that arises in dependence on sense pleasure. And that he acknowledges. He doesn't say it's not a form of happiness. He acknowledges it's a form of happiness. And he says, I explored this. I looked at this sense pleasure. And I understood how far the happiness of that sense pleasure extends. How far does it last? What happens? And so this is really, I think, what he's asking us to look at. So we start by looking at sense pleasure and observe it. The Buddha offers several analogies about sense pleasure. Some of them are challenging for us. He describes in particular, sense pleasure being like two strong men are dragging somebody towards a coal pit and going to throw him into the coal pit. And that one, you know, that one's not terribly accessible. It's like sense pleasure, like a being thrown into fire? I don't know about that one. But he has some others that are more accessible. Suppose somebody dreamt of lovely parks, lovely groves, lovely meadows, lovely lakes, and on waking he saw nothing of it. So too, sense pleasures are like a dream. And so this speaks to me because, well, there's a couple pieces about this that speak to me. Partly because dreams are kind of evanescent. They don't last very long. You know, they last as long as you're dreaming. And then you wake up and you realize that they're fleeting, that they're not very, you can't land on them for very long. And so this points to a piece of the understanding about sense pleasure, is that it actually doesn't last very long. It's fleeting. It vanishes. So when we actually look at the pleasure that comes when we get something that we want. The pleasure itself, you know, the actual contact with that thing, how long does that last? You know, something, I mean, there's certain things we think that the sense pleasure might last a little longer on. Like, you know, we understand that the sense pleasure of you know, having a piece of chocolate or something, that doesn't last for that long, that, you know, it fades when the chocolate is gone. Although, actually, I've watched this. You know, in exploring this teaching, I have explored the pleasure around chocolate. And to my surprise, actually, there is, following the chocolate being gone in the mouth, there lingers a kind of mood or pleasant experience. And I don't know whether that's the endorphins that the chocolates create or something. I know there's some kind of thing in the mind that the chocolate interacts with. But there's the pleasure of chocolate lasts for longer than I thought it did, actually. You know, it lasts maybe 30, 40 seconds. It's quite interesting to see that, to see. It's not, for me at least, it's not just as soon as the chocolate is gone from the mouth that the pleasure of the chocolate is gone. It lingers for a little while past that. And then it fades. It kind of slowly fades. And so we can begin to explore this. What is the pleasure around getting things that we want? What is the pleasure there? And the dreams analogy also speaks to me about another way that pleasure comes when we get something we want. Basically, a dream is, it's a construction in our mind. We understand that when we wake up. You know, we understand when we wake up that we've been dreaming about this great thing and that now it's gone. And that basically the happiness in the dream, if we've had a pleasant dream, you know, some of the happiness may linger in waking up, but very quickly we realize, well, that was just a dream. It's not really here. It's just a construct of the mind. And if we start to look at the pleasure that comes with things that we get that we like, this is another form or another way that the pleasure happens, is that it's not actually, you know, so something that we get that we want, I don't know, a new car or something, you know, something that we've wanted. You know, some of the pleasure may be in being able to get where you want to go without, you know, feeling like your car is going to break down or things like that. You know, some of that may be part of the pleasure. But part of the pleasure that happens with getting things that we want is that we think about them. That we remember that we have this thing and that we you know, we're lost in the world of thinking about it. Oh, isn't it so great? And maybe I'll take that trip, and maybe I'll do this, and maybe I'll do that. And the pleasure is not actually based on the thing itself, but on our ideas, our thoughts about the thing. And those ideas and thoughts are very fleeting, very evanescent, and are not really... they're not really connected to reality, because things happen in an instant. I just saw an image from the earthquake in Mexico of this very fancy car smashed by rubble that fell from a building. So, you know, all those thoughts about, yeah, I'm going to drive in that car, I'm going to do that stuff, it was all construct of mind. So, looking at this process, exploring what is the gratification of sense pleasure, how long does it last, we begin to see that it doesn't last very long. And that this actually is what the Buddha points to as the danger with respect to sense pleasure. He says, the danger with respect to sense pleasure, I'll read this part too. I lost it. I'll just repeat it as best I can from memory. He says that the gratification with respect to sense pleasure is the joy that comes with the pleasant feeling. He says the danger with respect to sense pleasure is that feeling is impermanent, unreliable, and uncontrollable. That's the danger, that we basically count on our happiness by associating ourselves with things that are impermanent, unreliable, uncontrollable. And the unreliable piece is basically that because sense pleasure is impermanent, it is not a reliable place to land for happiness, for any kind of lasting happiness anyway. And this was the Buddha's exploration. How might a lasting happiness be possible? And that was his journey. That was his query. Is it possible to be free from suffering? And is a lasting happiness possible? And in his own exploration around sense pleasure, he's like, wow, you know, I don't think that lasting happiness is going to come from a pursuit of sense pleasure. Because it's continually falling apart. It's continually going away. And so what happens is that we get kind of stuck on this, you know. So some sense pleasure we get, we have it, we hold on to it, we like it, it feels good for a little while, it fades. And then, again, the last time we felt good was when we had something that we wanted or got rid of something that we don't want. Not equally. There's an equal kind of hit of happiness with the getting rid of something we don't want that, in my experience, has to do with a feeling of control. Like, yeah, I feel like I'm in control. I feel like I can maneuver my life. I can make sure that I'm not being associating with things I don't like and that I can have things I like. And so there's a basic misunderstanding that this kind of happiness that comes from getting sense pleasure is as good as it gets, basically. And this is where the Buddha points and says, you know, actually, it's not as good as it gets. There is a better form of happiness out there. But our usual way of dealing with this has us just, you know, looking for the next thing, looking for the next thing. Basically, in encouraging this quality in the mind that's called sense desire, wanting things to be pleasant, and likewise wanting to get rid of things that are unpleasant. And so the sense desire is basically another way the Buddha put the danger with respect to sense pleasures is the desire is keeping us hooked in this belief that this is as good as it gets. So as we start to look at the gratification of sense pleasure, we begin, through experience, we actually do begin to recognize, you know, this doesn't last for that long. And what I find is that I'm just like, you know, looking for the next thing, and that doesn't last for very long. And, you know, in some ways, this points to a kind of existential suffering that we kind of understand, you know? It's like at some point, often in middle age, you know, we have kind of a midlife crisis where it's like, wow, you know, I've been getting up and I've been going to work and I've been doing these things and I've been getting things that I kind of like, but, you know, that's just like, I'm on the wheel. I'm on this wheel. And like, is this the point? Is this the point of life, to go to work so that I can get money, so that I can buy food, so that I can feed myself and my family, maybe go on a trip every now and then go back to work so that I can get more money, so that I can get food, and do that until I die? Is that the point of life? And so, you know, this kind of question around sense desire does come up for us at some times. And if we're fortunate, we meet a teaching like the Buddha to help point us in a different direction than just continuing along that same path. One thing I will point to here before we move on to the danger with respect to sense desire is that there's also a kind of gratification with respect to sense desire that I've seen that's different than a gratification that's related to the wanting. So sometimes we find with practice, with mindfulness, that, you know, we've meditated. Maybe we've gone for a day-long meditation, and or maybe even just meditated in the morning, and then we get up and we go outside, and it's like the air feels so fresh, and the sky is so blue, and the seeing, you know, just it's just beautiful. It's pleasurable. And this, in my understanding, this kind of sense pleasure, it's like the sense pleasure that kind of comes to us when we're present, when we're not lost in our thoughts. This kind of sense pleasure is almost intensified because we're not wanting it. Because we're not clinging to it, because we're not trying to hold on to it, it kind of arrives and we're available for it, and we're not trying to hold on to it. It's just like, oh, the breeze and the sky, and then, you know, then we do the next thing. We just move on. And in my exploration of this, this kind of sense pleasure that comes with, or this kind of pleasure, it's not, I think in some ways it may not be the pleasure so much. There's some bit of the happiness there that comes from being in association with pleasant experience. But I think a lot of the happiness there is because the mind is at ease and it's not kind of, you know, leaning out, looking for something or thinking about something to do or get or fix or change. It's here. It's available. And there's a kind of a pleasure that comes with that kind of presence. That's one of the kinds of happiness the Buddha points to that's essentially more more reliable or more beneficial for us than the happiness of trying to hold on to sense pleasure. And so I think that the happiness that comes with our practice, the happiness that comes when we're just able to be here, at times, you know, we get a taste of that. But that's not so much about the sense pleasure. In fact, or the sense desire and the sense pleasure. In fact, it's because we're able to just kind of let it go. We're not trying to hold on. That in some ways, the pleasure is more, it's a deeper, I call it a deeper kind of pleasure. And yet we do tend to grasp onto sense pleasures. We hold on to them. We want them. And one of the fundamental misunderstandings here is that, again, that getting what we want will make me happy. And yet what we misunderstand in that process is that the wanting itself, wanting, the experience of wanting to get something or wanting to get rid of something, the wanting itself adds an agitation, adds a kind of a, it's, it already is a sense of lack, a sense of incompleteness, a sense of neediness that feels off. The wanting itself is a kind of suffering. And yet because we have fundamentally kind of bought into the idea that when I get what I want, I'll feel good, it's like our minds are willing to put up with this, put up with the unpleasantness and the struggle and the suffering associated with the feeling of wanting and aversion, to hope in the future that I'll get that thing or get rid of that thing so that I'll have some happiness in the future. That's the way our minds are working. And partly they work that way because this is useful to watch. We can see this with our own experience. And in playing with what I would say would be a intentional act of renunciation, a simple act of renunciation, you might see this more clearly. So forego some particular pleasant experience, some simple pleasant experience, like having a latte or, you know, getting that piece of chocolate or something simple that you're going for. Just forego it and observe what happens. Observe the wanting and observe the thoughts. Because what I have seen in this process is that when I'm caught by this idea of wanting and the belief that the getting the thing will make me happy, my mind is constructing an idea about what that future will be when I get that thing. And it may only be like 2 seconds away, but the mind is doing this so fast. It's creating this idea, saying, yeah, that's going to be great. And because it's creating that idea and kind of, you know, taking birth in that reality, not actually present in the present moment for what's happening right now, which is the experience of wanting, which is what's happening right now, the mind is in the fantasy. It's in the idea of the having already. It's already projecting itself into the future, into the idea of the having. And so because of that, it's basically not seeing. Because it's dissociated from the actual present moment experience, our mind is not connecting with the feeling of the unpleasantness, the dissatisfying experience of the wanting itself. And so this is the kind of investigation I think the Buddha encourages us to do around gratification, sense desire, wanting. Look at how it works in our mind. Wanting encourages the mind to make up this story about the future, how great it's going to be when I get that thing. And because of that, we're not experiencing here and now the feeling of the wanting itself. And so if you forego some simple sense pleasure, you might see the mind do this kind of back and forth. You know, observe. So forgo the sense pleasure, not with the idea that somehow, well, it's inherently good to not have that thing, and then check out, go do something else so that you distract yourself while you're not having that thing. That's not what the Buddha wants us to do. He wants us to watch what happens in our minds. And so maybe renounce or forgo something and then explore what happens. The mind creating that idea. Oh, that pull towards that pleasant thought, you know, the feeling of that pull and what's happening here and now. It's that feeling of, oh, it doesn't feel good to want. It's like there's a problem here, and the wanting believes it's got the answer to that problem, and that's get that thing. And, you know, and, oh, here's that wanting, and oh, get that thing, and here's that wanting. And if you watch that process for long enough, for something simple, you know, something simple like that, you may get to witness the wanting itself losing its steam. And the wanting, because wanting too is another phenomenon of our minds. It's impermanent. It will go away. And so, look at that wanting. Watch that wanting. And at times you might actually see it let go. There have been a few times in my practice where I've really clearly seen a very strong wanting release. What felt like a very strong wanting. I mean, it was a simple wanting on a retreat of wanting to look at somebody. And I was renouncing looking at people. And at first I did it in the way, it's like, oh, it's inherently good not to look at people. That's what they told us to do. I'm going to do that. And then I began to realize, well, there's a lot of wanting going on here. That's probably what's better to look at than just trying to force myself not to look. And so I began looking at the wanting, feeling the way it kind of grew up in my being, and like this magnetic pull to the thing that I wanted, the idea of the happiness that would come from looking at somebody. It's like, really? The mind thinks that much happiness is going to come from looking at somebody. It's kind of amazing what our minds do. And then at some point, you know, just watching this whole thing, at one point seeing somebody and somebody walk in front of me, very, very tempting at that point to look up. Just all it would take was flick of the eyes to look up and look and see, who is that? That's what I wanted to know. That was the wanting. I wanted to know who it was. But not looking up, holding to that, you know, the wanting got even stronger, as it would have been very easy to look up. And then that person went up the stairs, went into the door, and vanished. And in the moment, as soon as the person went behind the door, the wanting to know who it was just vanished. The wanting released. And that feeling of the wanting releasing was like the mind had been let go from a vice grip. It was this contracted, it's like I was enslaved or imprisoned by that wanting. And as soon as the person vanished, the wanting released. That, again, that was a real deeper understanding around the both the danger with respect to the sense desire, not the pleasure itself. Actually, there's nothing wrong with sense pleasure, but our relationship to it tends to be one of desire. And that's where the danger is. And the danger there was both the suffering of it, the danger was that just being locked in a vice grip, and the incapacity to do anything else while I was locked in that vice grip. It had me imprisoned, that wanting. And the release of that wanting was the escape from the danger, escape from the sense desire. So a couple of quote around sense desire from Bhikkhu Bodhi. I'll offer a couple of them. And the first one in this, Bhikkhu Bodhi is talking about investigating desire. So just this kind of investigation I was describing in my own experience around looking at the wanting, looking at somebody. Bhikkhu Bodhi says, in this investigation, our concern must not be with what is pleasant, but what is true. We have to be prepared to be and willing to discover what is true, even at the cost of our own comfort. And for me, that was true there, because it was very uncomfortable to sit with that wanting. And yet, the willingness to sit with that wanting revealed the truth that wanting had me imprisoned, which I hadn't clearly seen, and the release and the happiness that came from the letting go of that wanting. And Bhikkhu Bodhi ends this with, real security always lies on the side of truth, not of comfort. And so, investigating this process, being curious about the process of desire, not just simply because somebody tells you it's good to renounce, but because the understanding will point you in a new direction. And in fact, this is the second quote I'd like to share with you from Bhikkhu Bodhi. He says, the Buddha does not offer as a solution the method of repression of desire,
That's an important piece. Repressing desire is not going to help. Actually, it will strengthen that desire. And so investigating desire is really what he recommends. The tool the Buddha holds out to free the mind from desire is understanding, is wisdom. Real renunciation is not a matter of compelling ourselves to give up things still inwardly cherished, but of changing our perspective on them so that they no longer bind us. When we understand the nature of desire, when we investigate it closely with keen attention, desire falls away by itself without the need for struggle. That was my experience as I investigated that wanting and saw it vanish as the person walked into the building. That exploration actually continued for some more days because that didn't end the desires to look at people. In fact, there was this funny thing where I began to like waiting for somebody to arrive so that I could watch the desire and watch it disappear, because the disappearing was so cool. And so I got kind of hooked to seeing the desire arise so that I could watch it disappear. And then at some point I recognized I'm holding on to this desire in order to see it vanish. And that one was quite memorable, actually, because I was the person was quite within eyesight. And I noticed that the mind was kind of holding on to the desire, waiting for the person to go someplace so that I no longer see them, so that I could watch the disappearance of the desire. And the mind in that moment recognized it was creating the desire. It didn't have to hold on to it, to wait for other conditions for it to vanish. And in that moment, the desire vanished, even though the person was still there, still available to be seen. And that was the real letting go of that particular wanting, because that one no longer plagued me on the retreat. It just didn't arise anymore, this wanting to look at people. And so the Buddha talks about this escape from sense desire. He says, the escape from sense pleasure is letting go of sense desire. It's not keeping ourselves from being in association with sense pleasure. It's not that. It's not repressing. It is as the mind begins to understand sense desire and lets it go, we understand a different kind of happiness. The happiness of that letting go of wanting is so different than the happiness of holding on to something. The heart is not constricted or tight or held there. It's basically, it's available for the next thing and the next thing and the next thing, and is just willing to be in this flow of pleasant, unpleasant, neutral experience that is just the kind of nature of experience, and not resisting being in that flow, not trying to hold on to or stop the flow, trying to push away any of that flow. It's just like, this is the experience. And with that heart that's not resisting, trying to hold on to or get rid of, there's more capacity of the heart to respond with compassion and love and wisdom and generosity. The heart that is full of greed and aversion is kind of tight, and there's not a lot of room for responsiveness instead of reactiveness. And so the Buddha talked about understanding the lesser nature of sense pleasure, understanding that this kind of happiness that comes from sense pleasure is not the greatest kind of happiness. There's, you know, different ways the Buddha talked about happiness that's deeper than sense pleasure. One of those being the happiness of concentration, the happiness of settling the mind in stillness. That creates a very deep kind of happiness that's beyond any. At times, the mind in settling into concentration is just so, so happy. a happiness that I've not experienced in relationship to any contact with the worldly pleasures, way beyond that. And then he also talked about the happiness of understanding, the happiness of letting go, the happiness of that understanding that the holding on is painful, and that the not picking up of that holding on, the not picking up, creates a completely different relationship to the world. Let's see if I can find that quote. He said, having understood as they really are, the arising, the passing away, the gratification, the danger, and the escape in the case of sense pleasures, I abandoned the craving for sense pleasures. Clear there, he abandoned the craving for sense pleasures. It doesn't say he abandoned sense pleasures. It's not possible to abandon sense pleasures. Sense pleasure will happen. I abandoned craving for sense pleasure. I removed the fever of sense pleasure. And I dwell without thirst, with a mind inwardly at peace. I see other people who are not free from lust for sense pleasures being devoured by craving for sense pleasures. And I do not envy them. Why is that? Because there is a delight apart from sense pleasures, apart from unwholesome states, which surpasses even divine bliss. Surpasses even divine bliss. My understanding of what he means by divine bliss is the pleasure of concentration. He says there's a delight apart from sense pleasure that surpasses the pleasure of divine bliss. And my understanding of that is the pleasure of release, of letting go. He talked about in the third noble truth, the realizing the release of craving. He said that is the deepest happiness. The realizing the release from craving, the deepest kind of happiness. Since I take delight in that, I do not envy what is inferior. And this comes back to a quote from the Dhammapada, which I'll close with. Oop, that's not it. I'll have to remember it as best I can. It's from the Dhammapada, something along the lines of, a wise one will forsake a lesser happiness for the sake of a deeper, greater happiness. And so that's the direction that he's encouraging us to move here. And it's time to stop. So thank you for your attention.